Welcome to this audio recording by the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm Jim Falk, President of the Council. We are a non-profit, non-partisan organization dedicated to promoting public awareness of global issues and the ways in which they affect the Dallas-Fort Worth region. Become a member today at dfwworld.org and help us connect North Texas with the world. This podcast is made possible through the generous support of Haynes & Boone, LLP. We hope you enjoy it.
Eunice, you have done me great disservice. From the pedestal you have put me, I have nowhere to go except to fall. Mr. Baloch, our Consul General, Pat Patterson, who is sitting next to Mr. Eunice, and members of the World Affairs Council, greetings, and it is an honor and a privilege for me to be here in Dallas today, a state and a town or a city that I admire greatly, but I did not expect these temperatures. I was hoping to come to balmy temperatures, but such is life. I'm going to speak a little bit about Pakistan-U.S. relations. I have kept my speech rather short with the purpose that I think we will have a more useful session in an interactive question answers. Pakistan-U.S. relations offer an instructive study in interstate relations. Pakistan has been a steadfast ally of the U.S. on almost all major issues confronting the U.S. after the Second World War, that is during the Cold War, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, and now the global war against terror. Pakistan was also the conduit through which President Nixon visited China in 1972 to begin a new chapter of relations between the two countries. At one point, Pakistan came to be called the most allied of allies. And that's quite an accomplishment in the presence of countries like the United Kingdom and Israel. Yet Pakistan also has the dubious distinction of being the most sanctioned ally from time to time. Going back into history, in the mid-50s, Pakistan became a member of the U.S.-led CENTO and SEATO security arrangements, essentially designed for the containment of the Soviet Union. While NATO contained the Soviet Union from the West, CENTO and SEATO contained from South and East. From the mid-50s to the mid-60s, our relationship was outstanding. It was a model of a relationship between any two countries. And it was during the mid-50s and the mid-60s that United States was the most popular country in Pakistan. I called that the golden period of our relationship. Unfortunately, relations began to cool off between the two countries during the second half of the 60s. We became the forgotten ally, and in the 70s, we had a number of sanctions imposed on us for a variety of reasons, and nuclear happens to be one of them. In the closing days of 1979, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, and the U.S. once again badly needed Pakistan. Pakistan willingly obliged. Thus began another decade of close relationship between our two countries. The U.S., in close collaboration with Pakistan, supported, funded, and trained what at that time we called Mujahideen, Mujahids from seminaries from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, and some other nationalities. This cooperation led to the defeat of the Soviets in Afghanistan and their withdrawal from Afghanistan and eventually their collapse. So Afghanistan, in a way, was the last straw which broke the camel's back. Unfortunately, the U.S., after its victory in Afghanistan, allowed itself to be diverted elsewhere, such are the problems of a superpower, leaving Pakistan to contend with the wreckage of the jihad in Afghanistan. What did we get out of it? We got a lot of guns, we got a lot of mujahideen, and therein lay the seeds of the present Taliban. The mujahideen were the fathers of the Taliban, both growing out of seminaries. The U.S., believing that it no longer needed Pakistan, chose to invoke dormant legislation such as the Symington and the Presser Amendments and stop military sales to Pakistan, citing concerns again over our much maligned nuclear program. I'm sure I'll get questions on that. The slide of the relationship continued through the 90s. This was the time of the rule of the warlords in Afghanistan after the Soviets withdrew, if we recollect, followed by rule of the Taliban and the birth of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. As this was not enough, our very good neighbors, India, conducted nuclear tests in May 98, followed by some tough words, leaving very little choice for Pakistan except to do a tit for tat, which we did. This again resulted in more sanctions and further downslide of the U.S.-Pakistan relationship. As luck would have it, once again, it was Afghanistan in the wake of 9/11 that pulled back the relationship out of the rut to the present day, where Pakistan is once again an important ally and a frontline state in the war to fight global terrorism. Ladies and gentlemen, I strongly believe that this roller coaster of the past has to stop. One reason for this yo-yo syndrome was that the relationship between Pakistan and the United States was founded on a very narrow base of security considerations and security considerations alone. If we are to rid the relationship of the past oscillations, we must broaden it and give it depth. We have to develop a more sustained relationship capable of weathering the irritants of the day. Fortunately, the leadership of both our countries is now making an earnest effort to lend substance and sustainability to the relationship. In brief, broadening the base of our relationship. Today, Pakistan is playing a pivotal role in the fight against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and terrorists. If the International Coalition against Terrorism is a team, Pakistan is the player with the most touchdowns to its credit. Pakistan has arrested some of the most senior and wanted Al-Qaeda leaders and rooted out Taliban strongholds from Pakistan's tribal areas. While doing this, Pakistan has also taken some of the heaviest hits in the war against terrorism. We have lost more than 700 soldiers in operations against the Taliban since 2003, and twice as many soldiers have been wounded in this war. Only last month, 43 of our army recruits were martyred in a suicide bombing. Pakistan played a crucial role in uncovering the plot to blow up airlines flying to the United States with liquid bombs. I think today the cooperation between the U.S. and Pakistani intelligence agencies and armed forces is very good. Despite sniping and the usual aspersions in the U.S. media about Pakistan's commitment to the global war against terrorism, believe me, we are resolute in our resolve to eradicate the menace of terrorism from our region. Today, this is my biggest challenge as an ambassador of Pakistan to the United States, to convince people here that we are firm in our resolve. We are not in bed with the Taliban. We don't like them. Our president has been hit 3 times. We are serving casualties. Our recruits are being killed. We must be really stupid or downright mad to support them. We are resolute in trying to finish this menace from our region. President Bush was in Pakistan in March this year. The two countries announced a long-term partnership and initiated a strategic dialogue process to lend sustainability to the relationship. Pakistan and the U.S. are today engaged in a cooperative effort in the fields of economics, trade, science and technology, energy and education. Energy is an area where I know Texas can be a partner with us. Our security relations continue to be the centerpiece, and within that is our joint commitment to defeating global terrorism. In case you don't know, terrorism is a bigger threat to Pakistan than it is to the U.S. This is without any doubt. Since the visit of President Bush to Pakistan, a number of delegations from the U.S. have gone to Pakistan, and a number of delegations from Pakistan have visited the United States to add substance to the relationship. We are moving fairly briskly in the areas of science and technology, energy and education. The education minister of Pakistan was here last week, and he held a day of intense discussions with his counterpart, that is Secretary Spellings. The two agreed to cooperate in a number of areas. It is my belief that education offers great opportunity to bring the people of Pakistan and U.S. together. Education also offers a great opportunity and a great catalyst to getting rid of extremism in Pakistan. A positive of the new U.S.-Pakistan relationship is the presence of a mechanism to conduct a periodic review of the relationship at very senior levels. The mechanism is called the Strategic Dialogue, to be held alternately in Pakistan and the U.S. The first dialogue was held in the United States. We are now preparing for the second dialogue between your Undersecretary of State, Mr. Nicholas Burns, and our Secretary of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Riaz Mohammed Khan. Hopefully, it will be held in Islamabad in February of next year. That means just 2 months from now. This dialogue reviews the full spectrum of the relationship with the purpose of providing impetus to the relationship. I think this is a very good vehicle to help the relationship forward. Now, a little focus in the area of business and trade. Pakistan and the U.S. are now close to the signing of the bilateral investment treaty. A lot of hard work has gone into bringing the position of the two countries close. I finally see a silver lining. In my mind, signing of the BIT is not an end product in itself, but it will certainly be an important stepping stone towards the final goal of reaching a free trade agreement. From a Pakistani perspective, it would be better if the BIT is signed as a component of the FTA. So we are working in that direction. Ladies and gentlemen, Pakistan has achieved economic recovery and sustainable growth as a result of financial discipline and a consistent policy on liberalization, privatization, deregulating of the economy. 85% of our banks are now deregulated in the private sector from almost 60-70% which were initially with the government. And at the time, they were 100% with the government. Our economy, ladies and gentlemen, is now on a high growth trajectory. All macroeconomic indicators are positive. After a GDP growth rate of over 7% in the fiscal years 2004-2005, where the economy grew by about 6.5%, and this year we are expecting a growth rate of 7% of GDP, which is only second to China. All sectors of our economy are showing progress, including agriculture, manufacturing, and the service sector. A growing middle class has increased consumption of goods, including automobiles, consumer durables, and in the area of telecom. To attract investment, Pakistan has fully liberalized its incentive framework. Today, Pakistan has the most liberal incentive climate in the whole region. And I don't say this. This is acknowledged by economists globally, and some of the leading magazines have mentioned that. There is no limit on foreign exchange participation. Free remittance of foreign exchange, including profit, technical fees, royalty, and capital. The government is also trying to improve governance, especially of those organizations that interact closely with business. Business opportunity has never been brighter in Pakistan as it is today. Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen, is committed to continue economic reforms. This has been, as I said, recognized by international agencies and shows that Pakistan's ranking has improved. The World Bank has said this, and it's also been covered by the London Economist. For Pakistan, economic development is critical for its national security. We believe that international trade and investment relations will sustain our high growth rate and are therefore key components of Pakistan's development strategy. We also consider international economic relations necessary to economically develop and to sustain our high growth rate, which again goes and helps in fighting extremism and terrorism. There are enormous opportunities for economic cooperation between our two countries. As mentioned earlier, our economy is booming. Pakistan is importing large quantities of capital goods to expand and strengthen our growing industrial base. There are tremendous investment opportunities in various sectors. In case you don't know, more than 600 foreign companies are doing business in Pakistan today and posting an impressive profit. And some of these are in the petrochemical field, particularly companies like Shell, Mobil Exxon, although it has a small footprint, British Petroleum, and a lot of other companies which are doing prospecting in Pakistan. Pakistan is acknowledged to be the most liberalized economy in South Asia today. The U.S., I think, needs to rediscover Pakistan. The visit of President Musharraf in September this year to the U.S. and his meetings with President Bush has further added impetus and breadth to relations between our two countries. In conclusions, I would say that I see a new phase of Pakistan-U.S. relations. Rather than focus on short-term and narrow interests, the relationship is now deepening based on long-term common interests and a shared vision for the future of this world. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your attention, and I'll be happy to, I don't know what the format is.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have members of our staff who are on either side. It's hard for us to see, Travis. If you'd raise your hands, please, if you'd like to ask a question so we can see you. I see we have a question there. Is that you, Ron? Back there? Travis, right there in the back. And someone else is over here, I think, taking a question.
Well, questions in the back.
Let me start, though. Here is one from a student, Brittany Johnson, who's a ninth grader at Ford High School, and she's done some research, Your Excellency. In an interview with Time magazine, you said that Pakistan will not let the extremist cause a problem using nuclear weapons. How can you make this statement?
Thank you very much for a very good question. I think our nuclear assets are buttoned up. They are almost hermetically sealed. We had an unfortunate incident of AQ Khan. We are not happy with it. We are rather ashamed of it. But just because of that, we have turned our corner. We are employing international techniques. We are getting help from your country. We have been working with the International Atomic Energy Agency. And I think our security of our nuclear assets is absolutely 100%, in fact, better than many of the developed countries who have had nuclear weapons. So the chance of nuclear weapons going into the hands of extremists are zero.
Ambassador, I'm delighted to see that your speech focused more on business opportunities rather than the same repetitive topics. I have a quick suggestion, or maybe something of a question. There's a travel advisory posted by the U.S. government on Pakistan. It's mostly for visitors. It's not for businesses. Most people think it's also for businesses. But I think as now the power shifts in Washington and moves towards more of a democratic front where the needs are more economic-based versus security-based, and Pakistan needs to be a little more proactive. So maybe some of the things I'd like to hear you talk about are the image issues and how the Pakistan embassy or there may be some media outlets that will improve the image, and also in if you've had any success in lifting the travel advisories.
Thank you very much. That's an important question. I'm afraid we have not been successful in lifting the travel advisory. The State Department very jealously guards this privilege, but we are talking to them, discussing with them, and they are seeing also the situation on the ground. We are even telling them to have the travel advisory for some areas which are bad, but not for the whole country. But that is going to take time. However, as I said, business is going on. And there are more investment coming into Pakistan since the last 2 years at least. And investment from the U.S. is also coming. As I said, there are a lot of companies, particularly in the pharmaceutical side from the U.S., we have companies working in Pakistan. And I think I met the U.S.-Pakistan Business Council before I came here. I met them in Karachi. And as I said, they are posting very good profits. And I think seeing is believing is more important. And I think we are making tremendous progress. And when people see what kind of business is going on and the security situation, I think people are getting over it. I just mentioned to Pat Patterson while I was sitting here that a friend of mine who I worked with in Albuquerque, I think a total blonde Anglo-Saxon, she came and visited us. We took her to all the parts which are supposed to be bad. We took her to Peshawar. We took her to the border with Afghanistan. We took her to some of the tribal areas, and everybody welcomed her, and there was no threat to her life. But these issues will be resolved with time.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you for your excellent presentation. I would like to ask a question about the tribal areas. And in particular, an agreement that was reached between the Pakistani government, as I understand it, and tribal leaders in North Waziristan. The reports here are a little confusing, and perhaps you could clarify that agreement. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. You have been very gentle in your question. By and large, people have said, what the hell are you doing in the tribal areas? It seems that Musharraf has gone to bed with the bad guys, and how is the security situation going to get better? It is going to get worse. So you really messed up. You have been gentle. But let me put the perspective straight. The tribal areas is a part of Pakistan which is governed very separately from the rest of Pakistan. And when Musharraf came into government, he decided that, you know, let's finish off this tribal area. Let us absorb them in the rest of Pakistan. And he had made plans for having elections and absorbing them in the rest of Pakistan. Of course, there were some stakeholders in the tribal areas who didn't want that because they had a lot of smuggling, a lot of things going for them. But by and large, I think the tribal area would have benefited. But this is the time around 9/11. So we got a lot of bombing and the war on Afghanistan started for the second time, and there was a lot of refugees from Afghanistan which came into Pakistan, and some of them of the same tribe which was on the other side. So there was a sympathy for the people who had been bombed in Afghanistan. Right or wrong is not the issue, but there was a sympathy. The mullah became popular, and Musharraf receded back. He said, let's not hold election now. If we hold elections now, the tribal leaders are going to go down and the mullah is going to come up. So we went back to the old tribal system. We are trying to strengthen it back. And at some times later in time, we will try and integrate them with Pakistan. Now, coming specifically, sir, to your question, the bottom line is that the agreement between the government and the North Waziristan Agency was signed to kill terrorism and not support terrorism. And this agreement, the tribes came to the government of Pakistan, to the governor, which is a traditional system going on for, I think, over a century. And they said that, you know, we've had enough. Let's have peace. And our government said, sure, let's have peace. And then there were a Jirga meeting. Jirga is a special system of discussing issues between two parties. And then a couple of decisions were made. The fundamentals of the decision that were made by the government of Pakistan with the tribe in North Waziristan, this is one of the seven agencies, was that the writ of the Pakistan government shall be maintained in this particular area. Number two, there will be no extremism, no terrorism, no fighting of government agencies in this region. Number three, most importantly, you will not go across the border and attack or carry out terrorist activity in Afghanistan. You can go across the standard issues that are allowed, that is between families and for business. And the next point was that you will not spread your creed into the adjoining areas of Pakistan. It was an agreement, and an agreement has two sides. The other side was that the government of Pakistan, as a token, will return 24 weapons to the tribal leaders. It's their position to elevate them. Number two, let me give this example. If this is the tribal area, it's like this, more if this be not, the tribal area, that we will remove the checkpost internally, which were set up by the army, and they will go back to the paramilitary forces. Now, it was being presented here that Pakistan has pulled out its military. Sir, that is totally wrong. What we have done is we have pulled out the military, put them back in bases, and some we have gone to reinforce the border posts which were being held by our military. So, instead of pulling out, we have strengthened it. And it is an agreement, sir, and we think it has good chances of success. There is no guarantee. It can go SAR. If it goes SAR, the military is still there, we launch our campaign again. But I think it has good chances of success. And having said that, I'll say, the British military, which is operating in Afghanistan, that too is trying the same technique with the tribal leaders there. And more than that, we had a meeting between President Bush, President Musharraf, and President Karzai in Washington, as you know. And between President Karzai, and it was a suggestion of President Karzai, between him and President Musharraf, it was decided that we will use the tribal leaders to defeat the Taliban and the extremists. So, in a way, I think we feel vindicated that what we are trying in North Waziristan is not bad. Then, related to that, I will go on, if you don't mind, is that there was a, you know, media went berserk, and I think Afghans also had some hand to play. They said, oh, the day the agreement was signed, insurgency went up, and the attacks from Pakistan, the crossing of the Taliban from Pakistan increased. Attacks in Afghanistan went up. I'm afraid the crossings didn't increase. That is incorrect. The attacks in Afghanistan went up because I think the British had gone into areas which were not covered previously, and the Taliban and the Britishers, they discovered each other. And but as I said, now the British are also trying their technique, and let's hope this succeeds. Sorry, that was a very long answer.
Yes, Your Excellency. On another issue, can you elaborate a little bit on the recovery efforts from the earthquakes that occurred 13, 14 months ago, and the progress has been made for the people there?
Thank you very much, sir, for asking me this question, because this gives me an opportunity to thank you all and thank the state of Texas, thank the Pakistani American community, and to thank major corporations of the U.S. and some very common citizens of the U.S. for helping Pakistan in its hour of need. And if you allow me, I think the first major support we got was from the United States of America when we got Chinooks, which luckily were just across the border, and these Chinooks arrived in Pakistan. We have a very small fleet of choppers, and they are small choppers. So the Chinook came in, and they helped us in the initial phases of the recovery from earthquake, that is, taking in supplies to the very difficult areas and bringing back the seriously wounded people to hospitals and so on. And from there started our relationship. And as I said, your country, your people, as always, America has been very generous, and I cannot thank you enough on behalf of Pakistan. However, now going back to your question, sir. We have essentially two phases. The first phase was the emergency, recovering people, bringing them to safe places, giving them food, taking people to hospitals, and second phase is reconstruction. On the first phase, I remember I visited a lot of the areas in Kashmir and northern Pakistan when the earthquake hit, both by helicopter and by ground transportation. And it was a very difficult operation. And many agencies, international agencies, including the United Nations, said that there is going to be an epidemic. The sanitary conditions are not good. People are not getting enough food. People will starve. Thanks the Almighty that none of that happened. Nobody starved. We had no epidemics. And we did not have, losses of humans because of the hostile nature of the climate at that time. So that was over. Now we were in the reconstruction phase. The government has set up an agency for reconstruction. All the funds that have come from abroad are being channeled from here. They have a very open, they also have a website. I'm sorry, I don't remember it exactly, but it is the earthquake era or something like that. I don't know if somebody remembers it. But anyway, all the money that has come is accounted for every penny. And I think Musharraf has been very, very careful on this, that we don't get a bad name out of this, so that we get the money and we are wasting it. I will only quote a journalist friend of mine, a lady who visited the earthquake hit area, sir, recently. I think it's about 2 months back I got an email from this friend of mine. And she went over this area. She choppered over some of this area thanks to some of our people. And she says that the reconstruction that is going on, she says, it is very heartening. We are making schools. There is a priority list. I think 60 to 70% of the people who are without a shelter, they have shelters. Some of them are still temporary shelters, but they are out of canvas. But it was a mega problem. And I think we are doing extremely well. We are managing it. We have to essentially rebuild three cities almost, Balakot, Muzaffarabad, and Bagh. And the plans are there, you know. The reconstruction that is going on, the government has advised the people, they have advisories and help on how to reconstruct so that they are earthquake-proof. There was a shortage of masons and carpenters, simple things like that. So a lot of people have been trained. It was difficult, and government has brought depots of home depot kind of thing way forward up in the hills so that the people have no shortage of construction material. Bottom line, it's going well.
Some have said that Afghanistan is on a slippery slope to becoming a failed state. What is your recommendation for what can be done and how can its neighbors help?
Thank you very much, sir. I think this is a very critical question, and this leads into some of the discussions I was having on my table. Afghanistan is indeed on a very slippery slope, and it is in the benefit of all neighbors, but particularly Pakistan, that the slide stops, Afghanistan recovers, becomes a stable nation, becomes a strong nation, because Pakistan constantly boasts about having a great strategic location. It wants to be a business hub. It wants to be a trading hub. It wants to be an energy hub. It cannot do that till Pakistan is stable. So it is in our vital interest that Afghanistan be stable. Now the million-dollar question is, how does Pakistan become stable? I think there is no easy answer to that. But if I was to use one word in its very broad meaning, I would say it's governance. Governance in Afghanistan has to improve. That means you have to have police which is functional, you have to have a military that is functional, you have to have a government that's functional, and that's the primary thing. And I think the second thing related to this is that Afghanistan has been ravaged by war for ages now, and it's a destroyed country. And I think the world community needs to help them. We need, as I mentioned, a kind of a mini Marshall Plan to reconstruct Afghanistan and help the Afghans stand on their own feet. They will not be able to do it because their old system of governance with the king and the tribes was almost destroyed when we destroyed the Soviet forces coming in. And in its place came the warlords. And in the place of the warlord came the Taliban. So the social fabric and the political system has been mauled very badly. And I think that needs reconstruction. It's not going to be easy, but I think we all have to chip in, including the neighbors, particularly Pakistan.
Your Excellency, I am sorry I cannot sweeten this question more than I can. However, I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit more on the hate-love relationship between the United States and Pakistan. I wonder if the leaders of Pakistan, including yourself, have thought about as to why this yo-yo phenomenon has existed for the last 53 plus years. As Pakistani diaspora, I think in an average American mind, Pakistan is still considered to be a country which is without established institutions, be that democracy, judiciary, or legislator. And if you could please elaborate as to what our present government is doing to establish that, to enhance the image of Pakistan so this, all these other ancillary issues can be resolved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked. There is no doubt that since our creation, we have had problems. We have problems of leadership. We've had problems in democracy. We have weakened our institutions over the years. And I think the present government is hell-bent, as they say here, to stop this. And one of the important indicators is the economy. When this government took over, we were almost folding. We had 2 weeks of reserves and our business was going, and we had a very poor face on the world as far as Pakistan was concerned and its economy. That has recovered brilliantly. One. Number two, I think this is the first time that there's not a single finger raised on Musharraf making money or doing anything like this. Every leader, other than that, almost every leader, there has been some baggage with him. he and his colleagues, like the Prime Minister, there is no such baggage. They are Mr. Cleans. Thank God for that, which is not unusual in the United States, but it is very unusual here. Now, on developing institutions, I think there is a lot of effort going in to develop institutions. There are police reforms, there are judicial reforms, there are issues of governance, there is issue of tax collection, there is this culture of you rub my back, I rub your back. So we have a lot of problems. I agree with you. We have problems of feeding and helping the religious extremists. We have been supporting them in the past, so we have a lot of baggage. It cannot be overcome in a day, but I can assure you that this is being addressed. So that is one broad issue of the image of Pakistan. We had Pakistanis, including myself, tarnish the image of Pakistan, which we are trying with a full spirit and our hearts to resolve this issue. Now, on the love-hate relationship between Pakistan and America, it is not the image of poor democracy and lack of governance, that too. But I think one of the main reasons of this love-hate relationship has been, as I said, the very narrow base of our relationship. There's never been a people-to-people contact. We have a large Pakistani diaspora. It is growing. And I think while I am an ambassador to the United States, you are bigger ambassadors than me. We have made a lot of progress. I don't think you need to be apologetic where we were. We are moving forward. And that is what you need to present to Pakistan. And I think Pakistan is moving in the right direction. When we have a larger base of our relationship, I am sure the yo-yo will go away, because the yo-yo was because almost every time we went together in a relationship, even of security, while the U.S. was looking at the Soviet Union, we were looking at India. Even the threats were different. So I think that we are trying to change. And if we succeed in that, there will be no more yo-yos. Thank you.
Your Excellency, thank you so much. Your comments were obviously very important to this audience, and we appreciate the time that you took to be with us. On behalf of the City of Dallas, I have a small memento to present to you. And again, thank you so much for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we also have tonight the Consul General, who I think has some special closing words and closing comments. And before he steps up, I'd like everyone just to give a very loud hand of applause for a group that often is not mentioned. And that is the, I didn't do that quite right because I didn't say who I wanted. Well, you're going to applaud for the ambassador, that's great. But the ambassador was talking about security. And over the last 36 hours, there's been a group of very hardworking people who often do not hear a hand of applause, and that's the police and criminal intelligence for the City of Dallas, and they've been working very hard to ensure the ambassador's and his party's security. So please give them another hand of applause. Consul General, please.
My very dear friends, ladies and gentlemen, what a wonderful evening. Look at the hall, look at the energy, look at the warmth, look at the friendship, look at the ambience. Thanks to all of you for being with us this evening. And thank you, my very dear friend, Jim Fogg. Thank you, my very dear friend, Dr. Riaz. Thank you very much, Mr. Yunus. Thank you, of course, Madam Chairman, World Affairs Council. And thank you each and every one of you who has made it today to participate, to welcome our ambassador to Dallas. But thank you, thank you. But having said thanks and gratitude, I think I'll come down to word let's audit ourselves. Is it only we come for the fun here? Just to eat, chat and go back? No, sir. This evening is very, very important. This evening, we are part of a very important effort. And that effort is, in my view, the following. U.S. is a country. U.S. has a society whose soul and spirit is multiculturalism. Its soul is diversity. And I always ask my compatriots here that how can you contribute to enrich this soul, to strengthen this spirit of U.S. so that the energy that you bring in from that great country also mingles with the energy which already exists here. And then thus we have a society which is productive, a society which is harmonious, a society which is congenial, where not only that we prosper worldly in world terms and material terms, but spiritually and socially. And that can only be done through social linkages, through individual friendships, through meetings, building bridges. And today's evening, ladies and gentlemen, is an effort towards that small little thing that we wanted to. That is to build bridges, to have linkages. And I think each one of you who has been part of this effort deserves a great applaud. So let me ask you to kindly join me for all of those who have made this evening possible. And in fact, having said this too, I think this effort is just not a one-time effort. We need to continue to do it and institutionalize it. And in that regard, I had won a couple of proposals, which of course I have the blessing and approval of my ambassador, as well as I have approval of my friends who have agreed to be part of these proposals, which are of course probably in the conceptual stage, but unless we dream, unless we conceptualize, we cannot achieve. So one of the proposals that for this evening I leave it with all of you to think about is to establish a sister city relationship between Dallas and a city in Pakistan. Do you approve of this, all of you? Wonderful. In Pakistan, the city that is to be linked or twinned, we will decide about it, but there are a couple of names, Lahore, Peshawar, Kuwait, Quetta, and we'll see which one fits in the profile. So we will discuss. And in this, I'm pleased to say that Jim Falk has kindly agreed to be the focal point, and I would request the President of Pakistan Society, Mr. Yunus, to kindly cooperate with Mr. Falk to see that this idea that we have this evening is moved forward and we translate it into a tangible sister partnership between Dallas and another Pakistani city. The other important proposal, which I'll leave it here, because when you say in public, it's kind of a semi-commitment to that thing. If I have said it today, I will have to think to follow it up. That's why I'm making it public even sort of before I went to my office in Houston. That is, visit by a World Affairs Council delegation to Pakistan. I hope that I'll be working very closely with World Affairs Council to see that a delegation can go to Pakistan, of course, in support from my ambassador to Pakistan, so that they can go. This delegation could be a diverse delegation of academicians, businessmen, doctors, engineers, social sector, or what is called leadership from the society, and they can go and see what is happening in Pakistan and come back with their real tangible impressions about Pakistan, so that this misperception that the ambassador was alluding to can be washed away. And the third proposal for tonight is, of course, a task which almost is in hand, but the president of Pakistan Society is a little reluctant to say it. So let me make it public. We have a challenge to establish Pakistan Center in Dallas. Are you with me? If you are with me, I am with you. And we will, inshallah, within the next coming 1 or 2 years, should establish Pakistan Center, a center which should become a center of friendship, a center which should become a center for goodness. With these words, I thank you again for such a lovely hospitality and warmth that you have shown. And very, very good night. God bless all of us. God bless Pakistan. God bless USA. God bless the world. Thank you. Good night.
For more information about the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, visit them on the web at www.dfwworld.org.